SF Signal, episode 47. What was the most recent science fiction or fantasy novel or story that blew your mind? And stick through the whole panel, because I've got voicemails for you at the end. This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Parsec-nominated Functional Nerds, which is kind of cool. I'm very jazzed about that. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And tonight, I have all sorts of people. I'm so excited. There's six people here. So let's get down the list here and say hello to Paul.
Hi, Paul Weimer here. I blog at Blog J Biston Style. I blog at FSA Signal. I blog at the Functional Nerds. I'm all over the internet.
Good for you. It's fun, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
We have a newbie tonight, John Ginsburg Steven. Or Stevens. Is it S at the end? I always mess that up.
There's an S at the end.
There is an S. Okay. Hi.
Yes. And I'm like Paul Weimer's evil twin.
You're blogging all over the place too, but you're doing
I'm blogging all the same places.
But you do it.
I say different things than he does.
But you do it with a goatee?
Yes, a full goatee, actually. A little braid in the middle.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, guys. So this is Karen Burnham. My own official blog is SpiralGalaxyReviews.com, but really these days you can find me more being the editor at the Locus Roundtable blog on Locus Online, or pretty much SF Signal.
How's that Locus podcast going?
You know, it's been going really well. I've been really happy with the people that we've been able to get in the conversations we've been able to record.
Were you mad at me when I said on Twitter that you were my podcast Padawan?
No, I was like, yeah, that sums it up.
Hi, Derek.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing okay, thank you. Derek Johnson. You can find me at SF Site with a column called Watching the Future, and also on occasion doing media reviews for SF Signal.
Very cool. Hi, Lisa.
Hi there, everybody.
What's your word count on the second book?
I'm not telling. I'm Lisa Pate Spindler. I run the Danger Gal blog at lisapatespindler.com. And so occasionally I do blog at SF Signal. Maybe one of these days I'll say something about Stargate Universe before it goes away for good.
It's getting so good.
Yes, it's good. It's definitely better than it was. Absolutely.
And you know how it got better? They decided to go the fringe route and have an alternate sort of kind of timeline.
Well, yes, and they're all working together now. Imagine that, sort of.
You know what tripped me out is when Rush played a practical joke. It was mean, but it was a practical joke.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa, Rush is playing a practical joke. Anyway. Hi, John.
How you doing, folks? John DiNardo here, resident blogger at SF Signal, also blogging at the new Kirkus Reviews blog.
I'm liking those, too. You're teaching people how to read science fiction.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks. It's a different audience than SF Signal, I think. I think it's more folks who aren't quite used to science fiction.
So, like, my entire family.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, all those other people we know and work with.
Yeah, it's like everybody. Yeah. So, tonight I have a question for you guys. What was the most recent science fiction and or fantasy novel or story that you read that blew your mind? Let's start with Karen.
Okay, so the book I've got here, which I swear, John, eventually write a review of for you for SF Signal, is called Of Blood and Honey by Stina Leicht. And I'm not sure I'm pronouncing the name right. It's L-E-I-C-H-T.
I think it's Leicht.
Leicht.
I know she's a new author coming up in Texas. This is her debut novel, and it really knocked my socks off. Basically, this is set in the 70s in Northern Ireland. The hero, Liam, is an Irish Catholic and is dealing with everything that means, being an Irish Catholic during the time of Troubles, when the British are, you know, sort of rampaging through Northern Ireland, arresting any old person on street corners. But he's also half Fae, so his mother is human, and his father, who of course has been absent most of his life, was supernatural. And that's really backgrounded for a long time, which I really appreciated, because the first two-thirds of the book really have more to do with how he's radicalized by being arrested and detained by the British multiple times, and how that makes him unemployable except by the IRA, and then he gets involved with the IRA. And I thought that was really the core, the strongest part of the book. But then there's also the supernatural element where the Catholic Church is fighting, you know, the fae that they think are demons, but there are multiple factions there. That all really starts to come to a head in the last third of the book for the climax. I thought the voice of this was just excellent. The pacing was perfect. I never had that feeling of, oh, gosh, maybe I'll go check my email. I read it in 3 nights. Just wow. 1/3, 2/3, 3/3, done. So very impressed by that debut.
I have heard nothing but good things about that book.
And it's got really lovely cover art, too. Nice and subtle. And the other thing, I love the way she was able to evoke the Irish cadence of speaking, but without getting into hard-to-read dialect, which can be a really tricky balance to pull off sometimes.
See, I'm Irish, and in Chicago, we had Uncle Denny would come over from Ireland, and he was the only one in the family that had the Irish accent. And my parents told me that when I first met him, I demanded that he show me his pot of gold. I was probably 3, 4 tops. Anyway, John Ginsberg Stevens.
That's me.
Go.
Oh, my turn.
Yes.
I was thinking about this a lot today because I've actually read several really excellent books recently. But in terms of mind-blowing, I would probably go with Paul Jessup's Open Your Eyes, which came out, I think, a year or two ago from Apex. And what was mind-blowing about it was the combination of how he wrote, but also what he did with a particular genre. It's space opera, but it's surreal space opera. So you have ships made of insect parts and bone, and you have captains who are sort of these weird pod people who don't actually interact with their crew directly, but create weird little dolls to interact with them. And the ships are sentient. And the novel opens with a woman who gets impregnated by a supernova. So it's very different.
You know,
it's intentionally designed to kind of blow your mind, I think.
I had a friend in high school who got impregnated by a supernova. It was not a good situation.
Now, was that in a supernova or on a supernova? Or
no, it was her partner was a supernova, and she was impregnated in the act of the supernova actually going supernova.
Dude, so I don't even know how that would work.
That's where the surreal part comes in.
It actually involved in the book riding on a, you know, command chair a lot, but it's interesting because what the book ends up being about are not the odd details. It ends up being about the choices you make in life, the stupid ones and the smart ones, and how the smart ones can even become really stupid ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to say too much about it without kind of spoiling it, because there's a cumulative effect of what's happening as people get more and more disoriented by the events of the novel. They make choices that they think are smart that have to be really stupid, and that actually have significant consequences for everyone until the end, when something happens that kind of ties it all up. My only complaint with the book would be that the ending is a little too neat, given the messiness of the book. But what made it mind-blowing were not just the odd details, but how your mind actually gets infected by the pacing and the cavalcade of imagery, and the way people are trying to navigate through this increasingly surreal situation.
Wow.
Yeah, I give that one a thumbs up, too. I'm sorry, I was just a quick interruption. I read that a couple years ago. I'd give that a thumbs up as well.
Yeah. So as far as recent books go, that's the one I read most recently. They're really, I like, you know, it stops sometimes and go, you know, whoa.
Wow.
Pause. And it's just really... I mean, one of the main tropes of the novel is that there's an alien language that is a virus, and that takes over people's minds, and they basically can't handle that rewiring. And you feel some bits of that through the novel yourself, and like I said, through the rhythm and through the juxtaposition of really strange symbolism with characters who are trying to be human and make smart choices and end up actually constantly failing to do so.
So, Karen?
Mm-hmm?
Have there been a lot of stories where, like, language infects your brain like that? Because it's... I was going to say, it feels to me like that's something that, that I've heard before somewhere.
I think the one that always springs to mind when I think of that is Neal Stephenson, Snow Crash.
Mm. Okay.
That's a classic one to use that trope.
See, additionally, I think... what's it called? Ian Watson's The Embedding also used a similar trope.
I'd also cite The Nanny. Her voice just gives me the creeps.
No, I know what it was. It was Doctor Who's Impossible Planet. The guy read the language and it affected his brain and he became possessed by the demon guy.
There's also the old Jack Vance novel Languages of Pow, which I believe uses some of those ideas as well.
That's a good one. I like that.
And there's a new once more. There's a new horror movie, or it's a couple of years old now from Canada, called Pontypool, where the language turns you into zombies.
Hey, DiNardo.
Yes.
Go.
Oh, so I thought about this, and I was real quick to jump on Messiah by S. Andrew Swan, but I think I've plugged that enough on this podcast.
This podcast, other podcasts, I think you wrote a book about it.
So I went back a little further, and I think the last book that I was really, really impressed by was Dog Blood by David Moody, which is actually a sequel to his novel Hater. Hater was also very good. And it kind of came across to the reader like a mainstream novel or a thriller disguised as a mainstream novel, but then it took this definitely science fictional turn. Basically, there's a division happening in humanity where half of mankind are becoming these haters, these incredibly violent people who just, you know, attack others without warning, and the others are the people who are unchanged. So it's kind of like this this us versus them vibe that they have, and Hater kind of set up that stage. Dog Blood, the sequel, takes place a little bit later, I think a couple of months later, and it really raised the bar a little bit on that premise, and it was just quite good. I mean, you're reading it and you're like, okay, yeah, I get this really intense us versus them feeling to the book, and you're going through it and you say, yeah, I kind of see what he's doing. It's just, this is good. This is a good treatment of that theme. And then he layers something else on top of that, and you're like, oh yeah, this is a little better than I thought. And then he does it again, and you're thinking, he's just like really kicking it into high gear. And it was just a fantastic, outstanding reading experience. So I'd say I'd choose Dog Blood for sure.
Very cool, Lisa.
Well, I'm going to go in a little bit different direction because lately it's been hard for me to find something that I can really sink my teeth into. And I have to say the last book that really captured my attention was All You Need Is Kill by Hiroshi Sakurazaka. It was the quote on the cover by John Scalzi is that it's science fiction for the adrenaline junkie. And that's exactly what it is. And it's what I needed at the time I picked up the book. I kind of have a tie between that book and Darkborn by Alison Sinclair, which is an entirely different kind of novel. So I put those two out there because they're so different, and it really depended for me what I was looking for at the time. It was the right book at the right time. And but I think I read All You Need Is Kill in one sitting. It's a short novel, but I couldn't put it down.
Those are the best. The ones that where you just start them and nothing is going to stop you from pushing all the way through them.
It was a wild ride from start to finish, and it was consuming that way, which was fun.
Very cool. Derek.
Well, first of all, I would have loved to have mentioned Stina Lake's of Blood and Honey. I can't really comment on it because Stina's a friend of mine, so... Bang goes that, and we've already talked about that.
Oh, so but you can help us get her on the podcast.
I will do so. Actually, I'll email her tonight.
Awesome.
Okay. Having said that, this is going to prove that a true love will never exist between DiNardo and I. I'm going to go with Hanu Rajneemi's *The Quantum Thief*. Sorry, man. Gotta do it.
That's okay, man. That's okay. I'm the only one who didn't have a good reading experience with that.
Sure, sure. And to be perfectly fair, you laid out your reasons why. Having said that,
loves to talk about it too.
Hey, well, I brought it up, so that's that. Having said that, this compelled me in just so many ways. It was, first of all, I read it probably late last year. And I'm actually reading it again to write a review for Revolution SF. This is like something Greg Egan would have done, but far stranger. You know, it's stranger than something like Permutation City. It also took some of the elements of a Charles Stross novel, and did pretty much the same thing. There's a lot going on in this book. It's basically a heist novel. It's got some cat and mouse detection. It's set in a post-human future that's really not quite like anything you see from Strauss or, say, Ken MacLeod or any of those sorts. It's, like I said, it's a heist novel. It's a novel of detection. There are so many ideas crammed into the 350 pages that you really do feel like you can get a headache from it. And it's the kind of stuff I completely dig. I'm really thrilled that somebody's actually writing something like this.
Hey, Karen?
Yeah?
What do you think about the Egan comparison there?
Okay, I haven't read Quantum Thief. I've read Ryan Yemi at the short lengths, and I don't know. Because I'm doing a lot of Egan scholarship right now, I'm seeing Egan is pretty different philosophically from what I know of Ryan Yemi. But again, I haven't read the actual novel, so hard to comment.
Okay, but now, does that kind of entice you a little bit into maybe thinking you might want to read it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's been on my list for a long time, but I don't have an arc, and it just hasn't gotten on top of my list yet.
Gotcha.
I'm pretty sure it's coming. Go ahead, John.
Oh, I'd say, actually, Derek, that was a pretty good description. When I was reading it, I was thinking of Strauss and Egan as well.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to admire in the novel, but it's not going to be for everybody. Just like, in that way, Egan wasn't for everybody. And in certain respects, Strauss isn't for everybody.
Okay. Paul.
Yes.
You're up.
Oh, well, unfortunately, the choice I was going to have is the one that Derek was just talking, waxing rhapsodic about, which was, well, The Quantum Thief. And the way I looked at it was not so much in terms of Egan and Strauss, but I thought of it as a post-human Nine Princes in Amber. Because we have a...
Oh, that's a good comparison, actually.
Because we have a protagonist who doesn't quite know who he is much more powerful than he appears, wanders through a weird solar system, going up against beings that know more about him than he does.
Oh, that old tale.
That old tale. And I was just blown away by the inventiveness of the characters, the setting, the ideas. I know John had his problems with it, but I thought it was brilliant.
Well, keep in mind that what John had John just had a really – he kept getting interrupted, right, John? You kept trying to read it, and then something would happen. You get interrupted. You try to go back. Then you got interrupted, and it was a
continuity issue. I recognize the books for all of them. Everything that everyone's saying about the book is absolutely true. It's that mind-blowing – kind of quality that you know, when you read certain stories, you're like, whoa, that's just like total, you know, it's awesome stuff. It really is. However, in my particular case, it was a situation of having read the book over too long a span of time, and it lost continuity for me.
Yeah, the problem I've had with Ryan Yemi at short length is I just bounce off how hyperkinetic he is sometimes. Like, there was one that I read in a Dozois Year's Best anthology, and it was just so hyper. I did find it a little hard to follow, and so far I've bounced off his short fiction a little bit. And again, so far in his short fiction, I haven't seen the sort of really core philosophical engagement with science as a pursuit that you typically think of or that I've recognized in Egan. But yeah, in terms of the post-human futures, I love that kind of stuff. So I'm really hoping that I'll enjoy the book.
That the post-human future seems to be very popular right now. Am I wrong in saying that?
Absolutely not.
I mean, it seems like that is a very popular setting right now.
Oh yeah.
And Karen's like, yeah, bring it on.
Well, no, I mean, you've been seeing it ever since, you know, Vernor Vinge and Singularity. And
actually, you know. I think you've actually been seeing it at least as far, at least as early as Bruce Sterling's Schismatrix.
Oh, yeah. Cyberpunk absolutely was the driver for a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. What is this cyberpunk Bible I heard about? Did anybody hear about that? The cyberpunk Bible or the steampunk Bible or something like that?
There's a steampunk Bible that I think just came out, and I know Jeff Vandermeer is producing another steampunk anthology or something like that, but as far as a steampunk Bible, I know a little. I haven't heard anything about a cyberpunk Bible. That'd be cool.
You know, steampunk, cyberpunk, it's all the same, right?
No, not quite. Well, in my brain, sometimes, yes, things get mixed up. But hey, that's just my brain. Okay, so we've got Of Blood and Honey. We've got Open Your Eyes. We have Dog Blood. We have The Quantum Thief twice. We have something that I couldn't spell, so I didn't write it down that Lisa said.
All you need is kill.
All you need is kill. I think I tripped up on the author's name.
Hiroshi Sakurazaka.
All you need is kill. So now everybody's going to go out and buy all these books and spend tons of money, as per usual, right?
Sure, why not?
They should.
My name is Paul. I'm a book addict.
Hi, Paul.
I think everybody who comes on this podcast or who listens to this podcast is pretty much a book addict.
Yeah,
that's safe to say.
Now, have you guys heard my new joke, which is that I've got a Kindle now, and the coolest thing about the Kindle is that now I can buy books instantly and not read them.
Yeah,
I do the same thing.
Yeah. Sadly, that's not a joke. I do the same thing.
That's necessary for a support group, man.
All right.
I'm the Quantum Thief as we speak.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
From where, actually? Because I'd love to get an ebook, but when I was looking a few months ago, it wasn't out yet.
Well, I'm looking on Amazon, but it's $11.99 for the Kindle edition, so I'm looking around right now.
Cool.
When does that come out in the U.S.?
It should be soon.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not out in the U.S. yet?
No, the original release last year was U.K., but it'll be... I know it's out. It's got to be out this spring or summer.
Yeah, I want to say I'd heard it was going to be out in
May. It has a spring publication date.
Okay.
May 10th.
Yep.
Well, that's not that far away.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for coming on. I appreciate it. We will catch you guys next week.
Sounds good.
Great. Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Well, that's it for that panel. If you have any thoughts or comments, you can leave them on the voicemail line, 720-277-9082. Before we go any further, though, I have a very special message from the Mango.
Hello, you magnificent rascals. This is the everlicious Matthew Sanborn Smith asking, is your life missing the vitamins, minerals, and not to mention the essential roughage that a daily dose of mango would supply? Are you prepared to receive mango into your life, but have no idea from which direction it might be coming? Well, my friends, grab the nearest set of safety rails, grit your teeth, and brace yourself for Mucho Mango Mayo. It's 31 brand new episodes of somebody's favorite podcast, Beware the Hairy Mango, all crammed uncomfortably into the merry, merry month of May. By the end of it all, you may have overdosed on its sweet and stringy flesh, you may never want to smell another piece of tropical produce again, but for those first couple of weeks, it will be pure heaven, I assure you. So join me and bloat yourself silly on far too much of a great thing. We'll get sick together and reminisce about the hangover for years to come.
Dude, I listened to so much that one time, podcast was like, coming out of my nose.
Good times. That's Mucho Mango Mayo at the home of the hirsute fruit, BewareTheHairyMango.com. Let the mango in and see how long you're able to keep the mango from coming back out.
And now I was checking the voicemail line, and we have a voicemail from author Gail Carriger. This is in regards to episode 37, where we asked which three female authors of the last 100 years had the same impact on sci-fi as the quote-unquote big three, Asimov, Clark, and Heinlein. Here is Gail's take.
Hey, this is Gail Carriger, and I'm calling in about your show topic, the three women as important as the three males you mentioned. And I normally don't call in, but I was actually driving along and yelling at the podcast because I don't know whether it's because she was too far into fantasy or not. I never mentioned Marion Zimmer Bradley, and I know she's a little bit more recent than some of the other people you mentioned, but she was also formative in several ways. One, unlike most of the other women you talked about, she had female main characters and protagonists. And two, she's the editor for a very long time of Sword and Sorceress, which admittedly is fantasy, but it introduced a number of new female writers into the genre. So I think her influence percolated outwards because she touched so many new writers. So I can't believe you forgot Marion Zimmer Bradley. The other one who I think really deserves a shout-out is Jane Yolen, and for the same reason as Ursula Gwynn in many ways, in that she pulled in some younger readers early on. So that was it. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you, Gail. We appreciate that. We also have a voicemail from our own Paul Weimer. Paul called in on episode 41, the 99-cent ebook. Take it away, Paul.
Hi, this is Paul Weimer of Blog J Vista Style, the Functional Nerds, and SF Signal calling on the topic of ebook prices. And one thing I noticed was missing on the otherwise excellent conversation was the concept of dynamic prices. In most markets, fixed prices do not exist for items. You have things like coupons, sales, discounts. Heck, look at airfares. And before you raise an objection, even books are subject to this. Consider, even physical books can vary in price. There are remainders, bargains, things like half-price books. Different people can pay very different prices for the same book. And I think that publishers and authors are going to have to understand that ebook prices are going to have to work the same way. They're going to have to be dynamic to better sell their product. And customers will have to understand that as well. If they want to buy an ebook first, early, they might have to pay a little more than somebody who waits a year to buy the ebook of the latest author. And, well, that is my 2 cents on the topic. And, well, thanks for a great podcast, guys. Bye.
I am not done yet. Our own Jessica Strider has a new segment that she's going to be doing for us once a month, and it's a new author spotlight. So this is something just to kind of generate a little bit of interest for you guys on a new author, someone that you might be interested in reading. So take it away, Jessica.
Hi, this is Jessica Strider from scififanletter.blogspot.com with this month's new author spotlight. If you're a fan of military SF and liked The Weapon by Michael Z. Williamson, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein, or Exit Earth by Martin Caden, then check out David J. Williams. His books include The Mirrored Heavens, The Burning Skies, and The Machinery of Light. The dust jacket for Mirrored Heavens reads, in the 22nd century, the first wonder of a brave new world is the Phoenix Space Elevator, designed to give mankind greater access to the frontier beyond Earth. Comparatively built by the United States and their Eurasian coalition, the elevator is also a grand symbol of superpower alliance following a second Cold War, and it's just been destroyed. With suspicions rampant, armies and espionage teams are mobilized across the globe and beyond. Enter Claire Haskell and James Marlowe, U.S. counterintelligence agents and former lovers, though their memories may only be constructs implanted by their spymaster. Now their agenda is to trust no one, for as the crisis mounts, the lives of all involved will converge in one explosive finale. And a startling aftermath that will rewrite everything they've ever known about their mission, their world, and themselves. Thanks for listening. Bye.
And there you go. There's our podcast for this week. Coming up later on Thursday, we have our interview with author Howard A. Jones. He is also the editor of Blackgate, and he's got a new book out called The Desert of Souls, I think is the name of it. I'm reading it right now. It's pretty good. And So we got that on Thursday. In the meantime, if you are looking for any kind of science fiction-y news, please do visit sfsignal.com. Mind melds, tidbits, all kinds of good stuff going on over there. If you want daily updates, follow John D. on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal. If you're looking for me, I appreciate that. I am www.atfmb.com or twitter.com/atfmb, and you can find me there all the time. If you enjoyed this podcast, there's a couple things you can do. Number one, you can go to iTunes, give us a couple stars, maybe write us a review. That helps boost our signal there. Number two, you can tell your friends. You can say, hey, there's this cool podcast I've been listening to. It's called SF Signal. Point them in our direction. We appreciate that. If you have any comments, thoughts, or questions, you can always leave them on the voicemail line, and that is 720-277-9082. If you don't want to make that phone call, you can go to sfsignal.com, click on any of the podcast posts, and there's a little flash widget that Google provides that we embed in the bottom of each post. Plug your number in, hit call me, and it will call you. And then that saves you the long-distance call. I think that's it for me. I will see you guys on Thursday. Until then, bye.